please come to order? Take off your mukluks, pull up a chair. An announcement before we begin, just to draw to the public's attention as well as members, our next meeting will be this coming Monday, March 5th at 8 a.m. in room 400 North. We've added two Monday meetings at this point to the schedule to accommodate the bill introductions. We may be adding other times as well, or extending these regular meeting times. So that's a heads up both for committee members and for the community at large.
Mr. Chairman, you're a slave driver.
I'll take that as a compliment, Representative House.
We may organize.
I would remind Representative House that to date the bill extending PELRA to the state legislature has not received a hearing this year.
We'll speed that up.
All right. also, House File 53, Representative Lesch's bill, has been withdrawn from consideration for this morning. So if you came in for that, I'm sorry. Representative Tilbury, good morning. Welcome to the committee. I'd like to move House File 933 to be passed and re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor.
Thank you. I love driving through rain, sleet, and snow to see you.
I didn't realize you were with the Postal Service, Representative Tilbury.
Well, it's either that or it's how much I value this legislation before us, so I couldn't miss it.
Very good. Representative Tilbury, you have an amendment?
Yes, I do. That'd be HO 933A1. I think you have a copy of that.
I'll move the amendment to be before the committee. I trust this is to get the bill in the order you wish.
Yeah.
Right. Any discussion to the amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Tilbury, to your bill as amended.
Yes, this legislation clarifies how vehicle protection products sold with warranties will be treated in the marketplace. Examples of vehicle protection products include alarm systems, body parts, marking products such as glass etching, satellite tracking systems, and other similar anti-theft devices. This legislation provides that the warranters of these products will register with the state and demonstrate the financial ability to cover their warranty obligations and provide disclaimers and claim procedure information in the warranty agreement. The financial responsibility requirements, disclosures, and disclaimers will significantly protect consumers who purchase these products. These regulations are easy to administer and do not impose a significant burden on the businesses who provide vehicle protection products with warranties or on the regulatory agency that administers this process. I would like to introduce Paul Cassidy. He will be testifying for me this morning in support of this legislation.
Good morning, Mr. Cassidy. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself to the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Paul Cassidy. I'm with the law firm of Leonard Street & Dinard, and I'm here today on behalf of the National Vehicle Protection Association, which is a trade association of manufacturers who produce and distribute automobile anti-theft products. Mr. Chairman, according to the United States Department of Transportation, there are over 204 million automobiles in the United States and 191 million drivers. That means that we have more cars and drivers in our country. In Minnesota, last year, in 2005, Mr. Chairman, over 14,000 motor vehicle thefts occurred in the state of Minnesota, costing consumers tens of millions of dollars in loss claims. As a result, anti-theft products are becoming increasingly popular in our state. Examples of anti-theft products are vehicle identification systems such as body parts marking and window etching, steering wheel locks such as the club, which I'm sure you've seen demonstrated on TV, alarm systems, ignition disablers, and satellite or radio tracking systems. Automobile anti-theft products have a proven track record in deterring theft and recovering vehicles in the case of theft. For example, American Family Insurance Company, which many of you may be insured by, reported that etched vehicles have a theft claim frequency 43% lower than that of vehicles without glass etching. National Car Rental Company reported the theft frequency declined 85% after its Cleveland fleet was marked. The Chicago fleet experienced a 30% increase in recovery rate after marking. For those of you not familiar with, I keep referring to etching or marking. Glass etching is basically an acid-based ink that is put on each of the glass pieces in an automobile. It's undetectable by anyone, but after the car is etched, they do put a decal on the car to say this car has been marked or etched. If you're a professional auto thief, you typically just walk right by those cars because they're worthless to you. You'd have to replace all the glass, or you'd have to figure out a way to find which parts within the automobile have been marked after you've ripped the car off. The facts speak for themselves. Amateur and professional thieves alike simply move on if they know a car is protected by one of those products. I'd like to also point out that in Minnesota Statutes Chapter 65B recognizes the value of anti-theft product devices, and mandates a 5% premium reduction for certain devices on automobiles. The problem covered by this legislation are anti-theft products with warranties that typically provide up to $5,000 in coverage in the event the product that you purchase fails to prevent your car from being stolen. The products deter the theft of vehicles, the system their recovery is stolen, and in the case of product failure, the product warranty protects consumers from the losses associated with the theft to the extent that the consumer's losses exceeds the vehicle's insurance coverage. The bill's purpose is, number one, to offer consumers a viable market of vehicle protection products with an appropriate level of mandated consumer protection disclosures at the time of the sale and a solid level of financial viability for standing behind the warranty. To protect consumers by requiring all manufacturers and distributors of vehicle protection products to acquire and maintain a warranty, liability, reimbursement, insurance policy, or have a minimum of $50 million in net worth to make sure the warrantors are financially able to pay their claims. And number three, the legislation provides auto dealers with the assurance that they're selling a viable product, backed by a company with the financial viability to stand behind their warranty and to pay the claims in the event of a loss. The National Vehicle Protection Model Act has now been adopted in 16 states across the country, including Wisconsin, Massachusetts, California, Florida, Illinois, Michigan, New York, Ohio, and Texas. House File 933 attempts to establish certainty in the marketplace for auto consumers and auto dealers alike concerning treatment of anti-theft products and to protect consumers from warrantors whose financial condition might not be sufficiently sound to make good on their product's warranty when it comes time to pay a claim. The bill also creates a very simple compliance structure. Product warrantors simply register with the Department of Commerce and demonstrate financial responsibility for the use of a reimbursement insurance policy or demonstration of a net worth of $50 million or more. Vehicle protection products are commonly sold with warranties that make claims to the consumer about the performance of the product. The warranties are not sold separately or apart from the sale of a vehicle protection product. The bill establishes specific recognition in Minnesota statutes for theft deterrent products sold with warranties. Doesn't mean that if you want to sell an anti-theft device without a warranty, that you still can't. Many manufacturers offer consumers a warranty with their product that provides assistance with costs associated with the theft of their vehicle. Examples of these costs include reimbursement for insurance policy deductibles, assistance with renting a replacement vehicle, license fees and state sales tax for the replacement vehicle, and other costs not covered typically by insurance. Receiving a money-back guarantee or a mere replacement of the product hardly assists those who had their automobiles stolen. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would stand for any questions if you'd like. Thank you.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Cassidy, let's say that Representative Tilbury's neighbor, who he likes a lot, went to bed one night and he thought of a wonderful device that would prevent theft of an automobile. And he worked in his garage and he perfected this and he thought he had a foolproof system and it worked in every instance. But then he found out because of this law, he has to be able to prove that he's worth a lot of money and he can back every warranty. So this person has two choices, to give his dream and his hope away or forget it. And it could have been another club or whatever it is, a very good device. Is this a fair way of doing that to Representative Tilbury's neighbor?
Mr. Cassidy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gunther, I believe it is a couple of things to point out. Number one, if you want to market that product and market that product without a warranty, you can. This bill does not prevent that. If you choose to market that product with a warranty, you have to go to the Commerce Department and register, and you have to demonstrate financial viability. Your neighbor doesn't have to have a $50 million net worth, however. He can also go out and buy an insurance reimbursement policy, which can be very affordable.
Mr. Chairman, I thought of that also, and it is a good response. You can get ahead of him.
Round one to the audience. Other questions for Mr. Cassidy or on the bill? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against this legislation? Seeing none. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Peterson.
Thank you. Technical question. How big is the auto theft industry? Why is this necessary? And what kind of a cost implication is there to manufacturers that eventually get passed on to consumers? I mean, give me again the why.
Mr. Cassidy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Peterson, first and foremost, the manufacturers of these products are supportive of the legislation.
Yeah.
That's the association which I'm representing today. In terms of the need for the legislation, part of the problem is that these products are becoming very, very popular. And you probably may not notice it as much here as you would on the coast, where anti-theft products are becoming very popular because of the cost of an automobile. It is one of the most, probably, outside of your home, most expensive assets that you'd have. More and more people are wanting these products now, and more companies are getting into it. A lot of companies which are not backing up their warranties or won't in the future back up their warranties. And we know that once they don't, the first call is going to go to probably the auto dealer that sold the product to them because someone's not picking up the phone to pay their claim. And the second phone call is probably going to go to the Commerce Department for one of you.
Mm-hmm.
That basically is why I'm here today and what the need for the regulation behind the product and the warranties and the claims that are being made on the products.
And then one more.
Representative Peterson.
And what's the national impact? This is for Minnesota. What happens to our neighboring states?
Mr. Cassidy.
What happens nationally? Is there similar legislation coming out in other states?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Representative Peterson. Yes, there are 16 other states that have passed this model already. I believe the model has been out there for 4 years now, 16 states. Most of the larger states have passed them. Wisconsin has passed the legislation as well as Illinois, and it's pending in a number of others. The last state just passed it was Massachusetts, which just passed theirs about 6 weeks ago.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so just so I get this straight in my head, basically this isn't requiring them to have a warranty if they sell this product, but if they have a warranty, this is making sure they stand behind their warranty, I guess in my mind, so we don't have the same problem we had in Woodbury where we had homeowners' warranties and everybody walked away from them and left the mess on the consumers of those homes. This is doing the same thing for people that buy these theft deterrent devices. And if somebody has warranted it, they're going to stand behind the warranty that they think they bought.
Mr. Cassidy.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Nelson, you're exactly right. First of all, you're not required to have a warranty with your product. This does not do that. You can still manufacture, you can still distribute, and you can still purchase a product that doesn't have a warranty. All this says is that if you're making those claims, you have to be registered with the Commerce Department, and you have to be able to stand behind those claims with a reimbursement policy or a net worth. The homeowner warranty situation is a perfect example. We were in here 2 years ago, the Commerce Committee, talking about that very issue in terms of service contracts that are being sold in the marketplace. They're a huge industry. They're growing exponentially year in and year out, and no one is asking the question, can they stand behind them? This does the same thing.
Thank you.
Mr. Cassidy, two questions that have occurred to me briefly. How does this interact with replacement glass? You focused somewhat on the glass etching piece. And secondly, I assume that this option is only available on new cars and not as an aftermarket add-on. And can you respond to those concerns, questions?
I'll take your second question first, Mr. Chairman. In terms of who it is available to, a lot of individuals that buy used cars purchase these products as well. They are separate products from a vehicle or a manufactured vehicle. your auto dealer will offer these products as an aftermarket part. So, you know, if you buy a used car as well, you can get glass etching. You can put other anti-theft products on your car. Your first question with regard to replacement auto glass, I don't know if there's a connection there outside of if an auto thief wants to try and file a claim on by taking out all six windows of the car that he just stripped off and file a claim for auto replacement glass. Good luck.
All right. Any other questions from members? Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a clarification on that auto glass. And when you brought up the question, Chair Dabney, my thought was, you know, you've got your glass etched, but your vehicle needs a windshield replacement. The question then becomes, you know, do you have take the vehicle in to get the windshield glass re-etched with that code?
Mr. Cassidy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's a very good question. I do not know the answer to that, and I'll get back to you. I would assume that there's something in place to allow you to go back to your auto dealer and get that one window etched once again if it had to be replaced.
Right. Seeing no other questions from committee members, the chair renews his motion that House File 933 be recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Filbert. Thank you, Mr. Cassidy.
Thank you.
Next up, House File 1022, Representative Knuth. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have an amendment that I think should be in your packet.
All right.
But you need to move.
Yeah.
Someone needs to move my
first, the chair moves House File 1022 to be passed and re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. And the author's amendment is the A1 amendment. Is that correct, Representative Knuth? I will move that as well. Any questions to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Motion prevails. Representative Knuth, to your bill.
Okay. Well, this bill is fairly straightforward until you start getting into all the details of the stuff around it. But basically, I was in touch with a Minnesotan who spends a few months in Arizona in the winter, as many Minnesotans are wont to do. And he actually sent me an email, and you can read his story. We had a little miscommunication. He was supposed to get it. He thought it was by Friday next week, so it's not quite as polished looking as I'd like, but it gets the story across. And basically, he goes down to Arizona every year and rents a car for 2 or 3 months, and has done this for a long time, and because of some circumstances found out 1 year that if he was renting the car for more than 30 days, his insurance coverage in Minnesota does not actually cover the rental car that he was renting, and he was basically driving around without insurance. And you know, there's different ways to get insurance on your rental car. One is checking it off at the rental car company. And in Minnesota, your personal insurance actually will cover your rental car for up to 1 month. What this bill does is extend that period to 2 months. And I basically trying, you know, the 30 or 60 days, the 1 month or 2 months seems somewhat arbitrary. And it probably is somewhat arbitrary, but it's just trying to strike a balance between the coverage for a rental car, which for many people is more than 1 month, and not actually having a rental car be used as leasing a car. And so, you know, I think 2 months is not getting anywhere near the actually leasing a vehicle. So basically trying to have fewer people trapped without insurance. And the amendment is actually perhaps more important for making sure people know that the car they're renting and how their insurance works with it. And if you look on line 2.28 of the bill, this is basically a notice that needs to be stated on car insurance contracts or car rental agreements before the person rents. And it states that they don't have to check off and buy the extra collision damage if their insurance policy was purchased in Minnesota. However, it does not inform the person that if it's for more than 1 month or 2 months, with the way the bill stands now, then they're not actually covered under their insurance policy. So this basically informs the consumer. The amendment basically informs the consumer more fully about how their insurance coverage fits with their rental car. And I haven't heard any strong opposition to the bill. Insurance companies will probably say it might raise rates slightly. The problem with that argument being is basically if a person knows about this law, the way to address it is to re-rent the car after that period of time. And so they basically will give insurance companies the same amount of risk without the insurance companies really knowing. And if you don't know about the law, you're driving around without insurance, putting the rental car companies on the line for their policies to cover the car if it's damaged. So the 2 months is basically trying to lessen the number of people caught without this insurance on their car rental. And I think the amendment informing people more clearly about the law on a notice that car rental companies already have to put on their rental contracts is a pretty obvious good thing for the consumer to know. So that's all I have to say on the bill.
All right. Questions for the author? Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Knuth, I really like the bill. It's great, but I have one question that just kind of snapped in my head.
Okay.
Let's say this friend of yours drove a minivan in Minnesota, and he got out there and he says, I'm on vacation, I'm going to re-rock and roll, I'm going to go rent a Corvette. Mm-hmm. You know that the insurance on a Corvette is much higher than it is on a minivan. Is that going to be somewhat altered when they get down there and rent that Corvette? Or I hate it when you rent and get insurance down there and you have insurance at home and you're paying for two insurance twice.
Yep.
So that's why I really like your bill. But I just wondered if from the insurance company's point of view, that kind of raised the clinker a little bit in my mind. It's not insurmountable.
Representative Knuth.
Mr. Chair, if you look at the first part, rental subdivision 5A, rental vehicles, it's basically the coverage is up to $35,000. So there is a cap on it. If you total the Corvette,
you're in trouble.
You're on the line unless you've checked off the extra insurance. And so I think that is in there basically to address some of those issues with renting cars and different. But you know, if your car is worth $2,000 in Minnesota and you go rent a car, you might be having some different problems. But that would cover the situation you're talking about.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you. Representative Knuth, I'm really glad you brought this. It takes care of us older people when we get down south.
Well, as a young representative, I'm glad to represent all age groups.
Thank you.
It seems like a good day for a snowbird bill anyways. Don't you think? Anyone in the audience wishing to testify? Mr. Johnson. Welcome back. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed, sir.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota, and I had a good meeting yesterday with Representative Knuth, and this isn't opposition to the bill, but I think it's fair just to maybe frame a little bit, and then I think the committee, as the bill's been explained, is pretty straightforward what it does. I have never had a call, question, or comment about this paragraph of the law since it's been adopted quite a few years back. So it's not really an area that I think from a consumer perspective or the Commerce Department or even our companies, or we run a hotline for consumers that get calls and questions about issues like it. So I think it's the 30 days, I believe, is probably for the most part has been a sufficient amount of coverage for most people renting cars. This genuinely is this issue of snowbirds if you go somewhere and actually rent for more than 30 days. So I'm not sure on balance that we need to change it, but I don't have any numbers, Mr. Chairman, so I'm not really here to say. I think this is a minuscule, probably a fairer description of it, but I'm not sure on balance that we need to. It adds coverage to everybody's policies. So by changing the law, every insurance policy sold in Minnesota Auto has 60 days. Most drivers don't need that. I believe that's a fair statement, but Mr. Chairman, I don't think it's really worth spending a lot of time beyond. I think it's fair pointing that out, and I had that comment that I indicated to the chief author that I was likely to say that, but it's not to oppose the bill. I think if the decision is a public policy, we should expand the box and have all the policies be expanded to go to the 60 days. This isn't the issue that's going to drive systems and premiums in Minnesota for consumers. There's other bigger issues that are way more significant. So I'll stop at that, Mr. Chairman, but I wanted to put that on the record.
Questions for Mr. Johnson? Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against this bill? Seeing none, the chair renews his motion that House File 101022 as amended be passed, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Knuth. And batting last today, I believe, House File 512, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Does that, if I'm batting last, does that mean I'm the cleanup hitter and I'm going to hit one out of the park, or not so much?
We'll wait to see. It's spring training, Representative Atkins.
And members, I'll give a brief overview of the bill. There are two author's amendments, and I believe I'm ex officio on this committee, so
yes, sir.
If somebody would be kind enough to move the bill for me, I'd appreciate it.
The chair moves House File 512. Be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have two author's amendments, the A1 and the A2, that I'd appreciate being moved as well, and then I'll visit with you about the bill.
All right. Chair moves House File, excuse me, the A1 amendments.
These amendments.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The chair now moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye. We can wait. We can be patient. My apologies. It's like watching somebody put food into a fish tank. Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, I was going to ask the bill sponsor here, if he gave me time, could I run out and get an amendment that dealt with per diem? And would he accept that as a friendly?
Representative Atkins.
See what happens, Mr. Chair, when we have delays. People are given time to think. I'm known for presenting bills in 45 seconds or less to prevent exactly that, Representative Peterson.
Patience apparently is its own reward.
Chairman Stahl, I've got one.
You know, I was kind of surprised, Representative House, that it wasn't in the packet already. Any other banter on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Representative Atkins, to your bill as amended, please.
Thank you, Chair Dabney and members. This is the gift card bill that you may have heard a little bit about. It's House File 512. Gift cards can either be the gift that keeps on giving or the gift that keeps on taking. And unfortunately, and I'm going to single out my friends at the Mall of America both for something that didn't go well and then something that they fixed. But a couple of years ago, I had a friend that got a $500 gift certificate for the Mall of America. He's not the promptest fella in the world, but it took him about 6.5-7 months to go and try to use his gift card. When he got there, it was worth nothing. It had expired. This was an adult. My kids and their friends are aware of many other situations involving young people that have faced the same issue. If you go buy, you know, it's the day after Thanksgiving, you go buy a gift card, it's the biggest shopping day of the year, and now gift cards are the single biggest purchase that people make for holiday gift giving. You give it over the holidays, and then you go and try to use it over spring break, perhaps. It may well have expired and become worthless. To the Mall of America's credit, that was the situation a couple of years ago. They fixed it, and that no longer applies at the Mall of America. But there are places that still have the expiration dates on the gift cards as short as 6 months. They've got what are called dormancy fees or monthly fees or service fees, a whole host of fees that may kick in as soon as 6 months after the card's been issued for $3.99 or $4 or $5. And suddenly that $25 gift card a year later is worth nothing because of the fees. So I give a lot of credit to Senator Sieben, former Representative Sieben, before she was given the wagon, the road, that pursued this bill to prevent the expiration of these cards and fees that eroded the value of these cards. What this bill does, and with the amendments, there's one lingering issue yet that I want to raise with you, but I've tried to work with the industry as well as consumers to try to find something that's reasonable for both sides. As far as what the amendment does, what the bill did was say no fees, no expiration dates, period. What the amendment does is it says that you can have an expiration date, but it can't be any shorter than 2 years. So a consumer is guaranteed at least 2 years in which to use that gift card. It also allows for bank cards to be excluded from this. And that wasn't necessarily because we wanted to exclude bank cards, but because there's the OCC and there's a New Hampshire case, and essentially we'd be interlopers in federal commerce issues, and we would have passed the bill and immediately had trouble with it the moment we walked out the door. So we opted to take bank cards out of the equation. There's also an exception for employer-given cards to employees in recognition of services performed, and for prepaid calling cards, all of which those are small exclusions, but ones that prevent much larger headaches. It still applies to the basic gift card, gift certificate that are given in Minnesota. One of the most troubling things, by the way, is that even though the buyer may be aware of exclusions or restrictions or expiration dates, whatever, the point of these whole cards is that they be given. And sometimes the recipient is not aware of those, be it an expiration date or fee. So we've added disclosure requirements that would be on the cards as well, so that if there was an expiration date, it would be right there on the card and you can see what the expiration date was. I do have a couple of witnesses, Professor Daly from Hamline University, that I'd asked to join me, and also Steve Hunter from Minnesota AFL-CIO, that have a little bit of comments. The one lingering issue that I'd make you aware of is with regard to the expiration dates. If we do allow for an expiration, even though it might be no less than 2 years, there's still an expiration, which means that there's some money that is lingering out there in space someplace. You let's say you got a $50 gift card, you use $10 of it, there's still $40 left on that gift card. The lingering issue for me is what's going to happen with that $40? Does that go to the store that issued the gift card, or does that escape to the state of Minnesota? The tradition, actually dating back about 800 years, is that it generally has escaped to the common good as opposed to the issuer of the gift card. I don't have the answer to that, folks, for you yet today. I certainly appreciate your input. I believe if we succeed today, this bill will be referred on to the Commerce and Labor Committee, and I'd certainly like to carry, and I'm sure Chair Dabney in his division report and his report to the larger or the full committee, if you've got thoughts or opinions with regard to where that money ought to go, I'd be interested in hearing that. We've got members of the industry here as well that I'm sure would be interested in hearing your thoughts and opinions on that as well. With that, I have the esteemed Professor Daly from Hamline University to present some testimony to you as well.
Professor Daly, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Yes, my name is Joseph Daly. I'm a professor at Hamline University School of Law. I'm actually testifying because Representative Atkins asked me to do it. I'm not testifying as an expert. I'm testifying as a person who has done some research on this, who happens to be a law professor, but I'm really testifying as a citizen. Representative Dabney and fellow representatives. This is really, the word for this is stored value cards, stored value certificates. Probably all of us have seen such stored value certificates cards. They are gift cards, they're phone cards, they're team cards, they're government benefit cards, they're travel cards, they're subway system cards, they're employee incentive cards. We've seen those. Generally they're plastic. They have a magnetic stripe, they have a barcode, they have some kind of embedded chip in them. Prepaid cards have exploded. In 2002, there were 1.9 billion transactions totaling $54.6 billion. In 2005, there were 6 billion transactions totaling $200 billion. Until recently, there were virtually no laws specifically addressing these prepaid cards. In 2004, 74% of all consumers purchased a gift card during the holiday season. Gift cards have taken the place of traditional paper certificates that most of us knew probably when we were younger. Why? It doesn't require a paper-based settlement. It's easier to clear and settle for the merchant. It allows the merchant to gather data about the consumer, the way the consumer uses the card. It helps the marketing efforts of the merchant. And best of all for the merchant, best of all from the perspective of the merchant, the biggest boon to the retailer is unredeemed value. Unlike a gift certificate, a gift card system has stored value, and there can be stored value remaining after a purchase. You don't use all $50 of the stored certificate value. The retailer does not have to provide the cash back for the balance remaining after the purchase. In fact, roughly 10% of the funds used in these purchased gift cards, 10% is never redeemed. It's never redeemed. Allegedly, right now, there's about over $100 billion out there in the merchant's hand unredeemed. In addition to imposing expiration dates, now many merchants are charging inactivity or dormancy fees, fees that reduce a card's balance after a certain period of non-usage. Both dormancy fees and expiration dates enable the merchants to derive pure profit because there's no product, no service rendered with the underlying funds. There are federal laws, and I think the amendment in terms of dealing with national banks is proper. I think the Office of Comptroller would say that you can't do that to national banks, so I think it's proper. There are a number of state laws, however, already trying to deal with this, but they don't deal with them very well. There's money transmitter laws, people who deal with money orders and traveler's checks. There's abandoned property laws. In other words, the legal term is escheat. S-cheat statutes. If the property is abandoned, the money typically goes to the state for public purposes. There's laws regulating dormancy fees and expiration fees, but only currently a few states such as California, New Hampshire, Maine, Massachusetts have such laws. There are laws regarding refunds and cash redemptions, but at present, there's no laws requiring prepaid card users to provide refunds for lost or stolen cards. It's up to each issuer of a policy. Now, here's my conclusion based on, again, limited research. I began thinking about this when I saw that this bill was being introduced, and I started doing some research. But here's my conclusions. With their burgeoning use, this is the time for legislators to confront the question involving prepaid cards. This is the time to end the dormancy and expiration of stored value cards, giving pure profit to merchants for undelivered goods, undelivered services. This has become a billion-dollar windfall for merchants. At minimum, don't let them whittle the card to nothing by such taking. Better yet, if it is abandoned property, then turn it over to the state for public purposes. The way it is now, it is the gift that keeps on giving. It keeps on giving to the merchants. So I testify as a law professor, but as a citizen in favor of this bill.
Thank you, Professor Daly. Any questions for Professor Daly? Thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Hunter, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Steve Hunter. I'm Secretary-Treasurer of the Minnesota AFL-CIO, an organization of unions representing about 300,000 workers who are also consumers in this state. We support this bill. We think it's an issue of justice and fairness. If I go down the street, I need to get a present, say, for my daughter's birthday, and I stroll into Friendly Steve's House of Electronics, I might not decide on what to get her, so maybe I buy a $300 gift card or gift certificate. At that time, Friendly Steve has my money, but I have not received any goods or services. If I give the gift card to my daughter and she doesn't use it for a year or two, in effect, the way I see it, they've had a $300 interest-free loan from me for that period of time. And I think if we're going to have an expiration date on the card, the time that card expires, they should send me my money back. Another advantage they have is if I do that, they have my money. Yes, when my daughter eventually goes in there, they'll have to sell her some goods or exchange some goods for the card, but they have that business. If I simply give my daughter $300 cash, she may put it in the bank and save it. She may go to Nelson's Hardware today and put it towards a snow blower. She may go to Dabney's House of Fashion and buy new clothes, but Friendly Steve isn't assured he's going to get that $300. So I think there's a lot of advantages to these cards for the merchants. I think this just puts the consumer on equal footing, and we support the bill.
Questions for Mr. Hunter? Thank you, sir. Representative Atkins, do you have any other testifiers?
I do not.
All right. So anyone in the audience wishing to testify either for or against this bill? Mr. Anderson. Welcome back, sir. Please introduce yourself to the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Buzz Anderson. I'm president of the Minnesota Retailers Association. And I want you to know that when I got this morning, I found out I was out in the driveway. My windshield wiper didn't work. And my computer froze up with the testimony that I had written last night for today. So I didn't have time to change clothes. So I mean no disrespect to the chair of the committee.
Took me a lot of time to do all that, by the way.
I wonder who that guy was shoveling in snow into my driveway. Well, thanks for the opportunity to speak today. Obviously, we're talking about gift cards, but I want to take a step back for a minute and tell you that I actually grew up in retail in my parents' retail store in southwestern Minnesota. And my parents had a motto, and that was, make the customer happy. Make the customer happy because you don't want to just sell them something one day. You want them to come back the next day and the day after. So it's all about building customer loyalty and making people feel good about having a good store experience. If people have a bad experience with the store, whether it's a gift card or a return or whatever it is, they're going to have a bad feeling about the store, and they're not only going to tell, they're not only going to act themselves, they're probably not going to go back to the store, but they're going to tell all their friends, too. And so stores want to avoid that. They want to make customers happy. So part of what stores have done to try to make customers happy is to accommodate people like Representative Atkins and me, who I'll just assume he's like me, and waits until Guy's National Shopping Day, December 24th, to get something for our spouse. And essentially, gift cards do serve a really valuable purpose because people don't know what size sweater grandma wears, they don't know what color she wants, but they know what store she likes to go to. Or in my case, I would never even guess what kind of albums my kids want or CDs my kids want. So I just give them a gift card to CD Warehouse, and they can choose out of the 70,000 titles that are available which one their kids want, which one they want to buy, and Dad won't give them something that they got to take back. So this has turned out to be a really valuable experience for both stores and customers. And again, we want to make sure that people have a good feeling when they leave the store, when they exchange that gift card, and so on. There isn't a store that I know of that's reputable that would want to cheat somebody out of a few dollars. So if you do, you lose a lifetime customer. And so stores are very, very, very sensitive to those kinds of things. Now, a lot of my members do sell gift cards. Very few have expiration dates. Very few. A few do. They indicate at the time of purchase that they have an expiration date. Here's a major retailer. And it says on the back of the card that it has an expiration date. It also says on the back of the folder that it comes in that it had expiration date from the date of purchase or from the last transaction. you can also add to this card. And every time you add to the card or you do something with the card, that expiration date gets pushed out. They also have a website that you can go to. They also have an 800 number that you can call in order to find out how much value you have in your card. Now, I have another relatively large member, though a Minnesota company, who does exactly the same thing. And one of the things that we try to do as a retailers association, since we have a mix of both big stores and small stores, is to try to help small stores also compete in the big box world. And two things we've told them they've got to do. One is they've got to have an internet presence. And number two, they got to sell gift cards because that's what people want. It was the most highly sought after item last holiday season. It was the second most widely sought after item the season before that. So we're saying, you know, hey, if you want to help encourage people to come into your store, if you want to have a chance to help build that customer experience, then start offering gift cards because people Elizabeth's age and my daughter's age, that's all they want is plastic. They don't care about paper. They want the gift card. Not for convenience, but the fact that it'll fit in the billfold and so on and so forth. Now, we don't want to see customers get duped. We encourage everybody, if you have an expiration date, tell the customer. Please tell the customer. And I don't know of any store that doesn't do that. On the other hand, I want to address what I see as a few problems in the bill. And I first want to compliment Representative Atkins for working with us to try to work through some of the problems. Number one is the few stores that have expiration dates, according to this amendment, would be required to put on the card when the expiration date is. Now, cards that sell in 50 states actually print these cards by the millions. So there's no way to put the expiration date on the card. In addition to that, if you're a smaller store, you probably buy cards in the thousands. And there's no way, again, to put the expiration date on the card. It goes on the magnetic strip on the back, but you can't print it on the card. So I'm hoping I'll be able to continue to work with the authors so that, you know, small stores as well as big stores can continue to offer these cards without that requirement because it just can't be done. I suppose it could be done, but it would be very, very expensive, and I'm not sure stores would do anymore if that, in fact, were the case. Another problem that we see with the bill is Subdivision 5 that talks about payment of debt. Now, stores don't like to encourage people to use their gift cards to pay off debt at the store. I mean, if they're buying an item, that's one way of paying for debt. But part of the reason stores don't want to encourage this is because one of the major retailers in my association actually has quite a number of people, you know, 25, 30 a week, who send gift cards in the mail to pay off their credit cards. The problem is the consumer has no proof that they are now sending in payment for that credit card. If it gets lost or stolen in the mail, again, there's no proof. The store doesn't want to send it back to the consumer because that just increases the chance that it's going to get lost or stolen in the mail. So the consumer is actually taking a chance when they send that in the mail that it's going to get credited to their account. We also see situations, and you know, it's interesting, the longer I'm in this business, the more I see unusual things. But we see people that buy gift cards with a credit card, like a Visa or a MasterCard, to pay off a store credit bill. And in some cases, they'll use the credit card from store A to buy a gift card at store A to pay off the debt at store A. It's not very reasonable. It doesn't make any sense to me, but I suppose maybe it's a way of chasing your debt. I don't know, but or avoiding your debt. But my point is there's a problem when you allow people to pay off debt with their gift cards. And I want to make you aware of that we may be creating a secondary problem that people are not aware of. Now, I wasn't really prepared to talk about this, or I wasn't expecting to talk about this, but both the author and the professor brought up the issue of escheatment. I've asked some of my folks to look into this, and Representative Atkins, I'm sorry I didn't share this with you. I didn't get it till late yesterday, but I'll give you this copy as I'm leaving. There was actually a Supreme Court decision in 1960 called Texas versus New Jersey. And in that case, there was a dispute over If the person has a gift card and it's and there's some left on the card, who gets to escheat it? The state where the person lives, or the state where the person bought the card, or the state where the company is domiciled? Well, the Supreme Court decided that if you have the address of the person who bought the gift card, it will escheat to the you can escheat the money to the state where the person lives. But if you don't, it will escheat to the state where the corporation has its filing. So if you're a Minnesota company and you've filed your papers here, then you could escheat the money, but only if you're a Minnesota company. That is, if you're a company that has your corporate papers filed in Minnesota. The Supreme Court also renewed that decision in 1990 because it was challenged in a case called Delaware versus New York. In this case, the Supreme Court rejected the argument that the state where the transaction takes place has a right to claim the unclaimed property. In other words, it still falls to the state where the company who sells the card has their corporate papers filed. So, in other words, if you pass this check on these cards, the only people you'll affect are people who have their papers in Minnesota. In other words, you only affect Minnesota companies. You won't affect companies who are domiciled, who do business here, but are domiciled in other states. And Mr. Pender, I know you're an expert in this area. I'll share this with you too. Again, I didn't get it until last night. And I'm not a lawyer, so I can only tell you what I've been told. The last thing I would tell you is that stores have different experiences with gift cards. I've got a family-owned store in Minneapolis. It's a very popular gift store. They have 5 locations. On the back of their card, it says that after 1 year, the card will start to devalue at $1.50 a month. Well, they found out that it costs them more money to do that than what it's worth. They also know that customers don't like it, so they don't do that. Now, they have thousands of cards printed. They still sell these cards that say that after 1 year, they're going to deduct it $1.50 a month, but they don't because it's just not worth it to them to do it. And they said, please, let us go through all the cards we have so we don't have to buy a bunch of new cards if you're going to make this illegal, because we actually don't charge this. We just have it on the cards, and we're waiting to get through these cards till we get a batch of new ones. So with that, I would be glad to answer any questions. And again, I hope the author's open to talking about some of these issues before it goes before the full committee.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. We have 2 members who've indicated a desire to ask questions. Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Music a compliment. I just want to ask Mr. Anderson if... It feels to me like as you were making your presentation that you kind of, there was a little bit of, excuse me, and I don't mean to sound disrespectful, but a little bit of circular reasoning. To me, this committee's name is Consumer Protection.
Right.
Here we are talking about the very issues that Representative Atkins brought to us about the people who buy these in good faith, thinking that their dollars, their hard-earned dollars, and a gift that they would like to give to an individual will be used in full. And the assumption that it is difficult to reduce the amount of dollars that to devalue a card, you just stated, is very difficult for the store that you own.
Right.
And so to me, there's a little bit of circular reasoning in what you stated. The Commerce Committee, I'm sure, will be dealing more with the issues from the business owner side. I'm sure that they'll be looking at that. But here, we are here to talk about consumer protection. I'm a high school teacher, and I have received numerous gift cards as thank you gifts from students for everything from writing letters of recommendation to just thanking me for being their teacher or for, a Christmas gift. And I still have dollars left on those cards because I've gone and purchased the meal or that there's still maybe $10 left in the card. I can no longer use that. And yet these students, these high school kids with their own money, bought these gifts for me to thank me for being their teacher. I want you to understand that for those of us who are consumers as well as legislators, we are here on behalf of the citizens. The citizens are saying to us, there's an unfairness about this devaluing the cards. And I am speaking very strongly in support of the bill. I think that we need this. It is what we're here to do in this particular committee, and that is to provide consumer protection. I don't know if I really am trying to phrase a question here, but I do want you to know that I hear the rationale, and it's not convenient.
Mr. Anderson, you wish to respond directly to Ms. Wells?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative. First of all, let me say I'm a former Facebook teacher, former legislator, and I am a consumer that buys gift cards. I know exactly where you're coming from. I don't know of any members of mine that have dormancy fees where the card devalues. I know of none. There's probably some out there that aren't my members, but I know of none. Where you commonly see them is in the mall cards. And those are not actually gift cards. And I don't mean to demean malls when I say this. There's a good reason that they sell the cards this way. They're actually bank debit cards. So they're issued by a bank. They're exempted in this bill because they are, in fact, covered by the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency. And when they sell those cards, if they have a dormancy fee or a card that devalues, it has to say on the front of that card, this card devalues after X period. And so it's actually a sticker on the very front of the card. You have to take it off to use the card, so you can avoid it. Again, I know of none of my members that actually have dormancy fees anymore. Now, again, a few do have expiration dates, but primarily the reason they still have expiration dates is because they want people to hurry up and use the card. We are a society that tends to procrastinate because we all have busy lives. And we encourage people to, you know, when you get that card, get it and spend it. And most people do. There is still unspent value in cards, but we want people to spend that. We want them to get into the card. Part of the reason is when people go into the store or the restaurant, they often spend more than is on the card. Because they come in with a reasoning like, gee, it's a $50 card. If I spend $100, it's only going to cost me $50. So almost universally, people spend more money than is on the card. So, you know, that's why stores really like them, too, because it brings people into the store and they tend to spend more. But again, I know of none that devalue that aren't already regulated by the Office of Comptroller of the Currency.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Anderson, you had mentioned in your testimony that it was not possible for many merchants to put a expiration date on their card. And then you mentioned that there's a company, gift card company or gift company here in the Twin Cities, that has on cards a statement indicating that they will be deducting $1.50 or so each month from the card. How would a company in the Twin Cities with only 5 outlets be able to have such information printed on their card, but would not be able to purchase cards that indicate expiration date?
Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I don't want to mislead you. A store can put on the card that the card has an expiration date, and that's one of the things I've talked to Representative Atkins about. That if you do have an expiration date, the card has to clearly state, this card has an expiration date. And I have no argument with the fact that the bill says that you can't have an expiration date before 2 years. I mean, we're fine with that. But these cards are all printed in advance. And if the card has a dormancy fee, where you devalue the card after a certain amount of time, that's printed on the card as well in advance. What I'm talking about with the bank debit card, the Office of Comptroller and Currency says you have to take a sticker and put it on the front of the card with the terms. And that, in fact, again, is regulated by the federal government, and that's why they're exempted from this bill. Part of the reasons that a mall will offer that kind of card is because when people go to a mall, there's all kinds of different stores in there, and they want to be able to use it. It's really a bank debit card. You can spend it at any store that accepts MasterCard or Visa. So what I'm telling you is that when a person buys a card, all they're going to be able to know is that from the date of that purchase and 2 years thereafter, or 3 years, whatever the expiration date is, it's going to expire after that time. I might also tell you, I know of no store that doesn't accept expired gift cards. You know, again, you're here to please the customer. Again, you're trying to get the customer to hasten their sale and get into the store. But I took a gift card that I had expired for 5 years into a major retailer, and they accepted it. Now, I don't think they have expiration dates anymore on their cards, but...
Representative Benson.
So I misunderstood when you were... I thought I heard you say that it was not possible for companies to be able to put expiration dates on the cards, and I thought that was one of the complaints you had against Representative Atkins' bill. Am I incorrect in that?
Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, you can't put a specific expiration date. Like, you can't say in March 1st, 2009, this card expires. The card will say that 2 years or 3 years from the date of purchase, the card will expire. Again, every company I know that does that, and there are very few anymore, I don't think you'll see any in a few years nationally, regardless of what we do in Minnesota, because consumers vote with their pocketbook, and consumers don't like that. So you're going to see more and more more and more companies eliminating expiration dates. You just can't put the specific date on, but as is the case with the card I showed you, it says this has an expiration date 2 years from date of purchase. It says the same thing on the back of the card. And it has an expiration date,
mm-hmm.
2 years from date of purchase or from the last transaction.
Representative Benson, brief follow-up.
Just a brief comment. This isn't a question, really. If merchants are now selling up to $200 billion worth of these cards, and approximately 10% of them are never used, or 10% of the value is not used, why would the merchant community be so anxious to have people cash in those cards completely? That's the problem here. I think we've got a lot of money floating around, which is going to merchants for products that the consumers never purchase. And I just find it difficult to understand why merchants would be so anxious to see to it their customers cashed in every penny on those cards. I mean, that's $20 billion free money, isn't it? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Anderson, do you wish to respond?
Stores are in the business of creating relationships with customers. We don't want customers to be unhappy. We encourage you to get in and spend every single penny you have on your gift card. We want that to happen. Again, because when you come back, you're probably going to spend more than what you have on the card. That's good for the store. We're happy about that. So we don't want people to not spend their gift cards, I can assure you.
Mr. Anderson, can these cards be used for tobacco purchases?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not sure. I think they probably can, but again, age restrictions still apply.
All right.
You're still required to show age... The age of the person, they have to be at least 18 years of age. And as you know, the federal law requires you to check everybody who you think is 27 years of age or younger.
Representative Gunther, to this point.
Mr. Chairman, in a way, a coupon is a gift certificate. Mm-hmm. And certainly there are a lot of coupons on tobacco products. Probably way too many.
Thank you, Representative Gunther. Representative Howes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just like to ask Mr. Anderson. You used to be somebody, too, weren't you, at one time?
I did used to be somebody, yes.
Mr. Chairman, members, we always kid each other on that when we're not sitting in committee. Mr. Anderson, do stores not like to sell gift certificates anymore? I don't want to name stores, but the five you talked about, do they do gift certificates? At all?
Mr. Chair and
Mr. Anderson.
Are you talking about paper gift certificates?
Correct.
Some stores don't want to go through the hassle of getting into plastic gift cards for a number of reasons. Number one, you have to have a system at your store that will put onto the magnetic strip the value of the card. And then when the customer redeems the card, you have to use the machine that you process credit cards through. And you say you pay the same percentage on a transaction when somebody cashes in their gift card as when they use their credit card. So point of fact is that it costs the store more money. It's a cost of doing business. But some smaller stores don't want to do that. So they want to stick to the paper gift certificates. The problem is consumers don't like them. Consumers want plastic. And stores try to give people what they want to buy.
Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Anderson, do you know of any stores that when someone comes in to buy a gift, and even though they're not real sure what kind of gift to buy, that just say, you know, we really don't want to sell you anything. We want you to take this gift card. This is the only thing we're going to give you. Do your merchants force consumers to purchase this gift card?
Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abney, Mr. Chair and Representative House, nobody is forced to buy a gift card. It is a voluntary transaction between the purchaser and the store.
Representative House.
So, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Anderson, after picking on Representative Atkins today, I would probably want to buy him a gift card without an expiration date.
Mr. Anderson, Representative Atkins.
Works for me.
Representative Dietrich.
Mr. Chair. It's
oh, thanks. Mr. Anderson,
Mr.
I'm sorry.
Chair, I can't buy him anything because I'm a lobbyist.
Do you know any stores that would sell a gift card for $4.99? Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just need to weigh in on this because many of you know that I've been married to a retailer slash merchant for the past 20 years. And I want to just make a couple of comments. First of all, the retailing business is highly competitive. And as Mr. Anderson started to, I believe, spoke to, trying to keep smaller retailers in business, that going to the gift card type strategy is a great tool for them to allow them to serve customers, which are our constituents and consumers, is a great tool. But in that 20 years, I have watched this whole gift card strategy evolve within the retailing world. And I have to say, it is a response to the consumer. The consumers have asked for it. And this is what makes their life simpler. It keeps money in the economy. It keeps people purchasing. So when I had the bill brief at home last night, I did show it to my husband, and I asked him what his response was. And he said most retailers are already doing this, that these are very reasonable approaches to gift cards. And as Mr. Anderson has pointed out, retailers do not want to do anything to hurt their customers or to be perceived as ripping them off. So I do support Representative Atkins' bill. The one thing that I look forward to, though, is the discussion on what to do with the part of the gift card that has not been redeemed. What happens to that money? And I would like to ask Mr. Anderson a question in regards to that. What happens on the retailer's ledger when a part of a gift card is not redeemed?
Mr. Anderson.
Where does that money go?
Mr. Chair and Representative, excuse me, I'm getting hoarse today too. According to IRS rules, when a gift card is purchased, it goes on to the debit side of the ledger, or the liability side of the ledger. Because it hasn't, you know, the store has been given the money, but the transaction hasn't taken place. Once the transaction takes place, they can move that to the asset side of the ledger as profit, and then it becomes subject to taxes. And I believe, and someone has correct me, I think that's a 2-year time window. So that card has to stay as a liability on their ledger until such time as the card is redeemed. I believe after the 2 years, stores are allowed to move it into the profit side of the column, but then they're required to pay taxes on it. I might also add, Mr. Chair and Representative, that there's various capabilities depending on the size of the store. There are some large retailers where if you buy a card and you lose it, they can replace it. Most smaller stores don't have that capability. It's like, you know, they give you a $10 bill and it's now in your pocket and it's up to you to decide when to spend it. There are other stores that, again, are large in nature. They're national stores, national chains. And they know when they sell $5 million of gift cards to however many customers that 20% are going to spend it in the first 15 days and that 35% are going to spend it in the next 45 days and that 60% are going to spend it in the next how many days. And they actually, you know, they actually track this every single year. And so they move that money, you know, from, again, from on their ledger to the profit side. Just based on that experience. Again, small stores don't have that capability, and so small stores just move it into the ledger, move the money from their redeemed gift cards into the ledger, either when it's redeemed or after a two-year period.
Representative Dietrich.
I'm done. Thank you.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A comment. Tomorrow is my wedding anniversary. After 4 decades.
Congratulations.
And I remember a few years ago that I gave 2 cards. Both of them were devalued instantly. One was a very funny card that I bought at the car wash, which most guys would enjoy. And the other one was a credit card at a local store. For the next 8 months, I would see both of those conspicuously displayed on the dressing table in the bathroom. Because she knew I didn't dare say a word as that thing ticked away and was going to expire. And I just was watching that thing knowing that that money was gone. So I'm really anxious to vote in favor of this bill so that next year I can repeat it knowing that it keeps on giving. Huh? I can't do it tomorrow, so I'm not sure what I'm going to do. So I don't want to vote so I can go buy my...
And nothing says love like plastic. We have two amendments. Representative Gunther, I believe both of these are yours. I find the H-512 A-101 and A-102 amendments. Which one would you like to move first, Representative Gunther?
Next to me, Mr. Chairman, we go with A-1.
Yeah. That's first. I like the logic. Okay. Representative Gunther, do your amendment.
Mr. Chairman and members, I own a small grocery store in southern Minnesota. We didn't have the electronics that they have at Macy's. We didn't have fur coats that people bought gift certificates for. And we didn't make 25% net profit. We were closer to 0.75%. So I would like to have gift certificates or gift cards. There again, to show my lack of sophistication, we never had gift cards, although we did have the ability to process it. I'd like to have them for less than $200 be exempt from this law, because to keep track for us of a $200 or less gift certificate would be an extreme burden. And really, I can't think anybody bought $100 worth of gift certificates at our grocery stores. Although it is the gift that everyone can use. Food.
Just a process point, Representative Duncan, would you please move the amendment?
Yeah, I will move the A1 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Representative Adkins.
Mr. Chair, I don't want to get Representative Gunther in any trouble, but I think you're required by IRS rules, at least according to IRS expert Mr. Anderson, to keep track of them. They have to be, in fact, I'll note on a quick tangent, part of the reason that I put in the possibility of a two-year expiration date was because I was under the understanding, and I said it to a number of people over the last couple of weeks, that this was a liability that would have to be carried indefinitely. And I'm a small business person myself. I wondered what kind of impact that would have if somebody went to the bank, small business, and I got all this liability that I'm carrying in unused gift certificates or gift cards. And I figured that probably wouldn't be a good mark on their credit if they're trying to get a loan. So I thought, well, maybe 2 years is the right thing to do. I learned this morning for Mr. Anderson's comments, that apparently it goes by IRS code from a liability after 2 years to an asset. I'm no longer convinced that there's a need for a two-year expiration date. And I say that to everybody that's sitting here today that I've been visiting with the last couple of weeks. That was my point in putting on the possibility of a two-year expiration. It would have to be at least that long. So I want to revisit that issue. I'll leave it on as an amendment today to specifically address the amendment. This amendment, folks, would essentially swallow the bill. Because most gift cards, as you might imagine, are given in quantities of $20 or $50 or $25, $200 or less, I don't think that there'd probably be any gift cards left that this bill would apply to. So I would suggest that it not go on.
Representative Gunther.
Well, knowing that I don't want to violate any IRS codes, laws, I withdraw this amendment because I was unaware of that. But at the same time, I think someday we should look at work comp insurers because they just love to take an injury from an injured worker and say there's a liability ongoing into the future for 10 years that we're going to keep this $90,000 set aside, and that is also deferred income. And I think... that's one that's bugged me in trying to manage my work comp claims in the past.
Representative Gunther withdraws the H512A101 amendment. Representative Gunther.
There again, Mr. Chairman, the A2A102 amendment is trying to help small businesses that do less than $20 million in gross sales. For a grocery store, this is a small business. For a gift card company, maybe that's a large one. But I look at, they aren't like Walmart. They aren't like Macy's. They don't have the sophistication to do the things that you want done. And I think it is a hardship on them. Even though they like to accommodate, that gift of food is a pretty important one. I think, I don't think that's against the code, is it?
Representative Gunther moves the H512A102 amendment.
Yeah.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, I believe that this would be kind of akin to the last amendment in that it would probably swallow. But I have the greatest regard for the folks that you're referring to.
Store.
I'm one of those people myself with the little law firm that I've got. But as Mr. Anderson noted, most folks are not... most small business people don't have expiration dates anyway.
No, we don't.
And they're not charging fees. In fact, the one comment I found interesting, the $1.50, the one that had the $1.50 a month, they're not even doing it because it's more of a pain to do than it is to and it costs more to do than otherwise. So I think we might be trying to find a solution with regard to the amendment that's in search of the problem. I don't think it's these small employers and small business folks that are having a problem with it.
Yes, but I want to make them exempt.
And that's my sense is that it's probably not, if we do it, and $20 million, quite frankly, is a lot. It may not be for you and the grocery store that you have, but having a chance to visit with some folks in the revenue department, I would bet that this is probably then applicable to about 90% of Minnesota's employers and would swallow up the bill. So I would argue in opposition to the amendment.
Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Atkins, I had three stores at one time. They totaled $20 million together. My question then is, and there again, I can see your point very well, and I look at organizations like the Metropolitan Transit Company. They give gift certificates out very much for people who need a ride. Do they have to track those gift certificates also until they're used? Do they have a way to track those also? And how about the YMCAs and the Chamber Bucks in Fairmont, Minnesota? You can go buy zero interest. You can borrow money from zero interest and get Chamber Bucks and their gift certificates. Do we have to track all those also? Is it unfair to have an expiration date for those?
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, we, in the definition section, lines 110, 111, 112, it indicates who it applies to. And since you raised the coupon idea earlier, I don't think it would apply to coupons. If you look at the definition, it's to gift cards, stored value cards, store cards, or similar record, a card with microprocessor chip, magnetic strip. Those are the sort. I think people know what we're talking about when we talk about gift cards.
Very well. Mr. Chairman, since this doesn't apply either, I will withdraw this one.
Representative Gunther withdraws the H512A102 amendment to the bill. Representative Anderson.
Well, Representative Atkins and members, I know in September I had received a sweater for my birthday, and unfortunately it wasn't to my taste and didn't have the heart to tell the person, so I've kept that sweater. I didn't take the time to return it. It's past, obviously, the time that I can return it, so in essence the person put that money with the store and didn't get any return or value from their purchase. And, you know, that's unfortunate, but as a consumer, that's the risk that we take, and people are aware that that might happen. When I look at the issue of the gift cards, I also know that people take the risk of the consumer not using a gift card. And unfortunately, I'm a person that I really don't like gift cards because I don't use them very often. In fact, I have gift cards to Applebee's, and I've got quite a few of them given as gifts from folks with well-meaning intentions. And it wasn't until, these are 5 years old now, and it wasn't until my husband discovered them. He says, I can't believe you haven't been using these. And so he hounded me about it, and I said, well, you know, they're probably expired. And realizing as a consumer that it's 5 years old, I don't expect them to be usable anymore. So I checked up on the website to Applebee's to see what their policy is when it comes to expiration. Sure enough, it's a year, or at least it was at the point that I checked that it was a year. But he said, oh, heck, why don't we try it anyway? It doesn't do any harm. We're going to go there anyway. So we go there, and we get absolutely the full value of the card. And, you know, I do believe that it is a tough racket out there when it comes to business, and I think that the business community is responding to consumers. I think that's why you see gift cards overall are burgeoning in use. I think that's the word that Professor Daly had mentioned. It's not a situation where in Minnesota people are failing to purchase gift cards. That has not hindered them from doing it. In fact, people are using them more and more as they fear giving that gift that will never be used, thinking that gift card is the solution, or at least it's not a reminder that they never see you wearing that sweater. With that in mind, if it was a situation where I felt that consumers were not using this as a source because they felt they were getting a raw deal out of it, yes, I would come to their defense right away. I certainly would. But I think the evidence shows that people like gift cards that it's not preventing them from increasing use of them overall. So that's why I'm going to oppose the bill.
Representative Lane.
Well, my goodness, all the comments we're getting in opposition to the bill are actually telling me that there's no problem with the bill. There's no problem that there's an extended or maybe no expiration date, because there's no problem. Stores don't mind. There's no problem that people should get the full value, because, you know, it's no problem. Stores want to favor their customers. There's no problem with this. I actually like the idea of payment of debt, because I don't like gift cards either. It makes me go to that store. It makes me go to that store. No. So here is the situation. We have the financial gain to realtors. They get you to come in to their store. They get you to spend maybe more than you would have. They get you to keep the money if you don't use it all. And maybe, if they're big enough, they get to gather data on your purchases. And there will be more of this as they think of more ways to make this a benefit to them, because consumers want them. And on the consumer side, there's all the convenience. So that's, to me, exactly where government comes in, to make sure the scales don't tip, but they stay evenly balanced. Good for the retailers, good for the consumers, and we make sure it stays balanced and doesn't tip the scales in favor of the retailers. And so this is perfect. I like this bill.
Representative Atkins, Mr. Pender has brought to our attention that given the amendments that have gone on the bill, we need to change the title. So if, without objection from you, the chair moves on page 1, line 2, delete the word prohibiting and insert limiting.
Agreed.
Okay. Comments to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Atkins, any last comments?
Only briefly. We live in a country where we think people ought to get what they paid for. Representative Anderson, with regard to the sweater, you may not like it, but I got what they paid for. When you go and you get a gift card, it's what people expect from this gift card is that it'll keep on giving. So that I can take it, go use it, get $25 worth of value for it. Rather than the gift that keeps on giving, however, in many respects, it becomes the gift that keeps on taking. We're hoping to eliminate those monthly fees. I didn't hear any comments in opposition to that. And from the sounds of it, it makes sense to eliminate the expiration dates as well. And I appreciate the testimony from Mr. Anderson this morning, the comments from people around the table. And I appreciate your support for the bill. And Representative Lane, now I'm thinking of getting into the gift card business myself. Maybe you convinced me my law firm should start offering gift cards. There's lots of good reasons to do it. So thank you all very much, and I appreciate your support.
With that, Chair Rudenhauser's motion that House File 512 is amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. We stand adjourned.